2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis with you this morning. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Starting out the hour, talking about purslane, which is a weed. And the way we got onto this topic is I brought Ton a picture of this weed that's pretty much taken over my yard, and I'd been digging it up, and I'm like, what in the world is this? I haven't seen it before. But tell us about purslane. It's a very unusual weed.
It is a very unusual weed, and a little bit of background before we talk about purslane specifically is that many of the weeds that we have in our yards and gardens were former agricultural crops. So things like shepherd's purse and many others were grown as spring pot herbs and salad herbs because they would come up quickly with the spring moisture, and they would offer a food source when there wasn't other things available. And so many of our weeds up until as recently as a few hundred years ago were actively cultivated as a garden crop. And so purslane is one of these, but still in many parts of the world, it's still cultivated as a garden crop. And so in areas of Europe, the Mediterranean, North Africa, South America, just like we go and buy different types of tomatoes, you know, Dave's Favorite Celebrities or whatever tomato you like, there are areas of the world that you can buy varieties of purslane to grow in your garden. And so it has a decent taste to it. It's one of them that, depending on the time of day when you pick it, the taste can vary. So in the mornings, it'll be a little bit more tart because of the what we'd call photorespiration and just different processes in the plant. Later in the day, it's a little bit more earthy and maybe a little bit sweeter, depending on when it's harvested. And then also, depending on the conditions, if it's more drought-stressed, it'll have a different flavor than if it gets, you know, regular water in your garden. So you had mentioned that you pulled it all out.
Right.
Which
you told me this after I pulled it
out. Well, and it's a good thing to get it pulled out because purslane is a weed because each plant produces hundreds of seeds. And even if, let's say you have bigger plants and you go and pull them all out, if you leave them in the soil, they'll just reroot. Because of that tendency to just reroot, you did the right thing as far as clearing the space out so that you don't have them going crazy.
How come I've never seen them before?
They spread in the wind, and we've been hotter, and it just seems like every year weeds have their 15 minutes of fame. And so this year, bindweed's going crazy because of hot, dry weather, and things like purslane and redroot pigweed, another edible, are going crazy because of hot weather and the growing conditions. So if in a wetter year, a different set of weeds would grow due to the favorable conditions.
Right.
So the thing I wanted to point out here, and I'm not encouraging anybody to go out and just start making salads from the weeds in their garden.
Especially if you don't know what it is.
If you don't know what it is, and even if you do your research, consider this. I'll have scouts troops, and especially 5-10 years ago, would call and they say, hey, we're going camping for the week and we want to live off the land as a troop. And I get the idea, but once you start thinking about it, there's nothing more stupid. Because imagine you're not going to have enough food because there's just, you're not going to be able to forage enough without a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. Then imagine you're visiting a foreign country with totally different cuisine. Mm-hmm. You are going to have diarrhea quickly by eating wild food. And I don't know how else, I'm just going to say it bluntly. Right. So you're up there trying to camp and we're just going to fish and we're going to eat wild greens. And what's going to end up happening is you're going to have the entire troop orbiting the outhouse. If you can find one, like planets, taking turns to get in there because your system's not adjusted to those wild plants.
Right.
So as you introduce new things into your diet, it's a gradual and slow thing. And many of these weeds that were grown and cultivated are not meant to be eaten in great quantities. They'll have things like in them like oxalates that can contribute to kidney stones, and they're meant to be eaten in moderation. And so when I see people all of a sudden decide, I'm going to become a forager, good luck with that, you know, and you've got to really do your research and transition into something like this. But I know that at one point, I think my dad was, he knew three or four things in his garden. He left a little section and he would pull some of it and go in and mix it into a salad. Purslane was one of them. And my mom would roll her eyes and my dad was on this kind of weed salad kick and he liked it. And my mom was always grateful when we got to July and August, when a lot of the other weeds besides purslane became unpalatable. And my dad's off that now, but there's actually many things that we don't realize that were utilized as food sources, either by Native Americans or by European settlers in our past because of that constant danger of starving.
Well, yeah, Europeans eat dandelions very frequently.
They do. And just the whole thing also, when we start to talk to people about how we are continuously reducing the number of plants we cultivate for food, it's true. And, you know, 100, 200 years ago, you would have had a greater diversity of things you grew in your yard and garden and foraged for your diet. And I think that there's something to be said. You know, I'm all about medicine and doctors and scientific research, but when you have a diverse diet, especially mostly plants, I just, you know, especially not just what we buy from the grocery store, it's going to be, in moderation, probably more healthy and preventative of long-term things like cancers and heart disease and dementia, just because of the wide diversity of things that you're eating.
All right. So now I'm conflicted. Do I get rid of the purslane? Do I keep it?
I think that you should, if you want to, it is fine to try it. And if you had a green salad and just cut up a half cup's worth and put it in that green salad, I think that would be fantastic.
Okay, but you mentioned it does take over. So we probably need to get it out of our yards. And how is the best way to do that?
Hoeing it out and then just collecting, if they're big plants, collecting them and throwing them away.
I can't believe how fast they grow.
Yes, and so if they're small seedlings that are less than a half inch tall, just hoeing them out will be fine, hand plucking them. But once they're 2 or 3 inches, you do need to remove them from your garden.
Okay, what an interesting conversation that I never expected to have on the Greenhouse Show. All right, the number to call, 801-575-8255. We are coming back with your questions. You can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500 with your questions. If you want to find out more about Purse Lane that we talked about just a moment ago, you can find out more. There's a fact sheet up now on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page as well. Next listener wants to know, Ton, do they need to get tomato cages for their Serrano pepper plants?
Not necessarily. If they're getting tall and floppy, they can just get inexpensive bamboo stakes or dowels, put them into the ground and stake them to the dowel and just wrap some, you know, either garden twine or just cheap, you know, inexpensive jute twine around them to kind of prop them up.
Right.
The cages would work. It may be overkill.
Well, and sometimes after the plant's gotten so large, it's tough to put the cages on anyway.
It is. And I think it would be easier even if they had to use a couple of them to maybe cage or stake those up with the bamboo anyway.
Right. Our next person wants to know if they can find, this is very specific, Cecile Bruner climbing roses to buy in Utah. This person is in, this is Susan Hendricks in Santaquin. She has memories of her grandmother's house growing over, you know, it growing over an arch, and she loved it. And she's wondering if there's any way she can get that.
That is a variety that's still available, but she'll probably have to get it in the spring. So she could mail order it from either Weeks or Star or Jackson and Perkins, or it's a common one that you could find before Mother's Day at larger garden centers such as Western Gardens, Cook's, or possibly up north, J&J. All of them carry lots of roses, but either mail order, it's one of those heirlooms that's still around.
Susan, thanks for leaving your name this morning. Next person says, my poor grass, ! Part of the yellow areas are smashed and sad. Should I power rake and aerate this fall or next spring?
It might help. Aeration isn't just a cure-all for all that ails lawns. It is something that you use for soil compaction and for thatch. And so if you have clay soil, it's always a good idea to aerate annually. Or if you can dig into the grass a little bit with a shovel, just put it in, split the grass open a little bit, and right under where the grass is green, where it turns brown to the soil surface, is the thatch. And it's actually mostly dead crowns and things, but if that is deeper than a half inch, then aeration would benefit for that also.
But you're still not going to ever say, you know, dethatch, or what's the best, what's the word that they used? Power rake.
Power rake.
There you go.
If
I've taken that word out of my vocabulary.
Yeah. If power you rake. Are going to top dress your lawn with new seed to try to reinvigorate it, you can actually, there's electric power rakes on Amazon that I've actually been seeing decent reviews, and they cost $100 or $120.
Hmm.
And so that would be a situation that you're going to reseed that you could power rake all the thatch out to have more seed get down to the soil surface. That's one situation. The other one is if you're ready to start over and the last ditch effort is to power rake, then go ahead and do it. But you need to do it hopefully in the spring so that the lawn has a longer time to recover. But in addition to that, if you're at the point you're power raking, then you'd better be pulling plugs out through aeration in the spring and fall for a few years so that you don't get back to that same problem.
All right, let's go to Joan in East Mill Creek. Good morning, Joan. How can we help you this morning?
Well, I've got a problem with a hibiscus. I have a planter on my front porch that faces east, and I have the little plants called boa copa that grow over the side. But my hibiscus just bloomed and bloomed beautifully, And now it gets the blossoms, and it looks just like somebody's cut them off. It hasn't bloomed for, two or three weeks. But when I go out to look at them, the blossoms just fall off. They don't dry up. They just fall off green.
I suspect that you have Western flower thrips. They're really hard to see, but that's very characteristic of what they do. It could be there's a small possibility that spider mites and aphids would cause that, but you would see the curling leaves or the webbing from the spider mites. So what I would recommend doing, because it will actually suppress all three of them, is getting a horticultural soap or a horticultural oil, something like neem, Safer Soap. There's several brands out there, Triple Action. And spraying that down, according to label, it'll probably be anywhere from every 4 days to every 7 days. And for around a month, just consistently spray it. And that will eliminate thrips, aphids, spider mites, or at least greatly suppress them.
Okay. Because the leaves are fine. They're not.
Yeah, and that's why I suspect it's maybe thrips. But if they're falling off like that and it looks healthy otherwise, that's very characteristic of thrips.
And so just the same thing. To spray it with.
Yeah, so fortunately, the neem, all those products I just mentioned are good for soft-bodied insects and spider mites.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for your call this morning. Our next listener says their impatiens are being stripped of leaves and flowers. They treated for slugs, snails, earwigs, bill bugs. I want to put earwugs in there for some reason. Anything else I can try?
Well, it depends on what they treated with. You know, if they put down a bait, and the reason I'm suspicious they did is because of the slugs and snails. Because
see, now you're doing it.
Yes. They are, there's baits out there that have both carbaryl and metaldehyde, which would go after slugs and earwigs and things. And I think that they should do something topical over the plants themselves, and so something along the lines of the high yield pet garden and livestock or Triple Action or Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, any of those. But I think that they should probably spray the impatiens themselves weekly or according to label with something that goes on the impatiens themselves.
Right. All right. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. One of our listeners is kind of chiming in on Purslane saying, hey, you know what? You can find it at some Mexican markets as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, you can find out more about Purslane. That was the topic at the top of the hour on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
Let's dig around town with KSL Greenhouse.
Gardening athletes, you won't want to miss this class on August 10th at Redview Gardens. Explore plants that will fuel your hardest training day. No pricey supplements needed. Sign up at redbuttegarden.org. Learn how to harvest and preserve herbs at a walk and talk on August 11th at the Ogden Botanical Center. You can learn more at ogdenbotanicalgardens.org. Learn how to create water-wise park strips with Conservation Garden Park on August 19th. Register at conservationgardenpark.org. And on August 25th, learn how to create amazing rock gardens while incorporating cold hardy succulents that will not only add color, texture, and interest, but add drought-tolerant plants to your landscape. Sign up at weberbasin.com. Now, this week's quick tip.
There are some pests that require regular attention throughout the growing season. Greater peach tree borer is one. It attacks not only peaches, but also many other stone fruits. There are a few products that can be applied preventatively throughout the growing season. Refer to Utah State University Extension's Greater Peach Tree Borer Fact Sheet for details. It's available for free online.
You can also find the Dig Around Town calendar and more fun gardening info at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.